Today we'll talk to a mama bear on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Did you know that mama bears can change the world? Leslie Klipsch will tell us how. Then Garrison Keillor will tell us about the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Welcome to Scribble, Leslie.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, I must say, for a first-time author, you're off to a smashing start.
She certainly is. Tell us about your, you just had a book launch.
Yes.
And it really got launched.
It did. We are flying high. We had the launch party at the Plaid Rabbit in the village of East Davenport on October 12th or 11th, which was the day that the book released, and the place was hopping. It was fantastic. There was over 150 people who came to this book party. Many of the people who I wrote about in the book were there, which was really fun, and we drank champagne and we ate bear claws.
and you sold how many books?
I sold 130 books. I sold out of books that day. So it was, as you can imagine, just such fun for me and for
my
family. There
are authors all over the Quad Cities. I know. Turning green with envy.
I know. I mean, I've been at launch parties with three people, so.
I've never had that many people to any party.
Well, I've never had a launch party. I just think.
Any party. You name a party. But that, you know, in a way you cheated because you mentioned a lot of people in the book.
I sure do. You're absolutely right. You're so right. And, you know, that's what I told everyone there that evening was that, yes, we were celebrating the launch of this book. But honestly, I really felt like it was a celebration of just all of the amazing people in this community. So it was really fun to be able to just call on the people there and honor them and thank them for the just incredible work that they do that I got to tell in this story of Mama Bear's Manifesto.
Well, you got my curiosity up even when I looked at the title, because Manifesto doesn't seem very motherly.
I know. It's fierce, right?
Yes. And you don't seem like a fierce person at all. Well, but I think you're passionate, right, about your cause.
Mm-hmm. Well, she certainly addresses anger in the book.
Yes.
What prompted you to use the image of a mama bear?
Well, it's one that you hear so often, right? In our culture, people will talk about your mama bear. You know, they'll see a mom who's really upset about some sort of injustice that's going on with their child. It's sort of that passion and that, like, that bit of anger that sparks when the world has maybe wronged your offspring, the people that you care so much about. And this mama bear kind of comes out. So I think, you know, I tried to kind of tap into that with just this whole idea of the power that we have as moms, and really just to name it that mama bear spirit. Because I do, I think that's something that culturally people understand what it is, that, oh, her mama bear came out. Like, look out. She's angry. She's on fire. Something's about to happen.
Well, you know, it's true. Of my three daughters, one has children, and we all refer to her as the mother lion.
Yeah, and I mean, mama bear goes, it's biblical, you know, it's been an age old sort of that fire and that strength of a mama bear.
But a mom's group guide to changing the world, you're not talking about mom's going it alone. You're talking about mothers working as a group.
Yes, you are so right.
And you give an approach to this in the book, too. But you came to this accidentally, didn't you?
I sure did. Yeah, I moved here with my husband and our two children at the time 8 years ago. And when we showed up in the Quad Cities, we were surrounded by family who embraced us, welcomed us, shared their friends with us. And in particular, my sister-in-law invited me into the circle of women who were doing incredible things. They had gathered together as moms with so many children underfoot. You know, they were mostly stay-at-home moms. There were piles of Legos everywhere. They were mothering their children really well, but they also kind of had their pulse on a lot of the problems of the world and the issues of the world. My sister-in-law, Tessie, invited me into this group, and I just started watching these moms and observing what they were doing. Ultimately, this group of women from Eastern Iowa, from the Quad Cities, Muscatine area, they started this movement that raised over $500,000 for clean water in places that were once without. So this came about because I saw the power of that group of people who were awake to the world, who understood the influence that they had, who really grabbed that power of the mama bear, you know, that spirit, and just shared it with others. So It was an incredible experience. And I think, you know, I'm a writer by trade and an editor and writer. And so I happened upon this great story, and I couldn't help but take notes along the way and really do my best to share it with others and hopefully inspire other groups.
One of the things I noticed, Leslie, in reading that this is almost a devotional book, as well as a guide as to how women can coalesce and achieve things. And it's church-centered, and in particular a Christian. It's a Christian church devotional book, as well as a guide to changing the world. How would this gain application outside of that circle, which is of considerable size, but that does not embrace the whole world or all moms?
Yeah, I think that it still can reach all moms. I think that it's true. This book talks a lot about my faith, which is very personal to me, obviously very important to me. But my Christianity, my faith is really it's about love. I often call it love with a capital L. This is what I believe. It's God that's loving, that is compassionate, that is open to everyone. And so I think that this book, the particular language that I use, is going to be familiar with someone who comes from that faith, the Christian faith background. But I think the ideas that I present, you know, the ideas of just meditation and silence and connecting with a higher power and then connecting with the humanity of those around us, I think those are very general concepts that whether or not you attend a Christian church or whether or not you attend church at all, you still can access.
I remember my wife when we had children, and we had children, five kids in 7 years.
Wow.
So yeah,
wow.
we had we quickly had a mob.
Yeah.
And she was saying she wished there were someone she could talk to because no woman, or no man, really, is ever prepared for parenthood. You can read all the books in the world you want, but you're never prepared. Of course, you were a role.
No. I thought I was, but I think you all discover you're not very much. Yeah. I have an interesting question. You address this primarily to moms. Do you think it's important to be a mother before this mama bear awakens?
No, I really don't. I think that we all have the spirit inside of
us. We being women?
Or men. Absolutely men.
Okay.
As well. I think a papa bear could absolutely, we could replace the word mama with papa in this
but,
book.
But you certainly make the case for motherhood being very good training.
Yes.
For going out into the world and making wells and water and things like that.
Right, yeah.
But you have to have a somewhat larger view beyond your children. Yeah, I mean, obviously your care is specifically for your children, but that you have to go beyond that they are the children of the world, so to speak. And it is true that nothing can arouse a woman's interest more than a small child.
But I think what Leslie suggests, at least the parts that meant a lot to me, were that after motherhood, there's got to be something.
Yeah.
And that something might become CEO of a company and make $1 million, but it might be going out and changing the world. And to me, it was really interesting. I started teaching at Augustana in 1960, just as the feminist movement was getting going. And I can remember the feminists on the faculty, which ended up to be, you know, at least half of the women would have called themselves feminists, went through a period where the kind of volunteering you're suggesting people do was demeaning. Mm. You ought to get paid. You are valuable. You ought to get paid for what you do. You know, and there's my wife who did not work in order to raise our children, you know, feeling diminished by the feminist movement. But so where do you fit into the feminist movement, or has the feminist movement itself changed?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I definitely consider myself a feminist. And I think with my generation of mothers, of young mothers, we're in this really interesting place because the women who have gone before us have opened doors for us. We can work if we want to work, you know, that this is such a gift and it's something that we shouldn't take for granted. But I think we're in this time where so many of us are very well educated. And we have all of these skills and these talents. And again, I understand that this is a privileged place to come from.
Mm-hmm. Who knew?
Happens to the best of us.
Who knew that Roald was so popular that people would call him on his cell phone? You need any help in smashing that?
Help, yeah.
That has never happened. Nobody's ever called me before. I'm sorry.
But this is the
This
is the day of the automated robocalls.
Oh,
so
I know.
Even it's cell so phones true. Get I these know. Calls.
That is so true.
Little musical interlude. Let's go back to what you were saying.
Okay, so let's see. So I think recognizing this privilege that many women have a partner who can provide financially for the family, a lot of people are in this position where they can make a choice. There's a choice involved, whether to stay at home with children, whether to go out and work, you know, 40 hours mm-hmm. a week outside of the home, or to kind of do a hybrid of both. I spent the first, 9 years of motherhood kind of working part-time from my home so that I had a handle – or I had a hand in the working world, but I also was home working at the home. So I just think it's an interesting time for women, and I think that as far as having those choices, I think that is a great benefit of – the feminist movement of the 1960s is that we're today here with these choices. And I think that this sort of volunteerism that I talk about in the book, you know, that's definitely part of it. Not doing these things for any sort of money in return, that can be a really fulfilling thing for women. That can be a choice that they make. They can kind of find their purpose in that and use their education and use the skills that they had, that they used often before they became mothers. And it also, I hope, speaks to the moms who are working full-time outside of the home and just encouraging them to use their mama bear spirit kind of in the same sort of realm.
You know, the greatest change in the world, in my estimation, is the final unleashing or liberation of women. To my mind, women should run everything. I mean, that comes from a lifetime of working with men and women. And when I want to know something or I want to get work done, I talk to a woman because they see more, they take in more, they're better able to cooperate. This is not universally true. You know, you can go to extremes of like Thatcher and Palin, but most of the women in the middle of that, they're the ones that I would trust with the world. I really would. But that's, you know, and it's only in our time that opportunity is presenting itself.
Mm-hmm. And so, in this place where we are, because in so much of the world, that's not the case for women.
That's true. That's true. And to unleash that power is a very good thing. And your book, you know, as I say, it is directed more toward a particular religion, Christianity, and people who are church-going Christians. But still, the application, as you suggest, goes beyond that. And I think you may have a lot of luck with this.
let me talk a little bit about the nitty-gritty of publishing. How did you get the book published?
It was a long process. I wrote this book actually 4 years ago.
Okay.
I, as I mentioned, have been freelancing as a writer and editor. So I've written a lot of shorter pieces, articles, essays, things like that. But I really wanted to write a full-length book. And I had, again, been taking notes and watching these women in action. And so I took about a year and just wrote the book because I needed to. I wanted to get it out. It turns out that often in nonfiction, you really just need to write a book proposal in order for publishers to look at you. And I didn't fully realize this, you know, during the time that I was writing the book. I have to say I probably would have written the book anyway. That was just a passion project. But I wrote the book. It took about a year. And then I spent another year slowly writing a proposal. I was then able to sign with an agent, a literary agent, who then shopped the book around. And
so you got they do say that you need an agent now to get published.
Yes. Right? I think that was a very, very
important
piece.
I know people that are desperately trying to find agents and can't.
Mm-hmm.
How did you?
I think because I was already sort of in the industry, I knew people who I had one contact in particular who encouraged this particular agent to pick up my proposal and look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have arrived, Leslie, I must say. Your launch party was terrific. Now, don't be too discouraged if they slow down a little bit.
That's what I hear. It's easy to sell a lot of books the first month. It's month two and month three and month four that it gets a little trickier.
Where do you find this book?
It's on Amazon. Barnes & Noble locally will carry it. Books A Million.
And by the way, you are having a book signing today.
Yes.
From 1 to 3 at Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Mark McLaughlin, who will be on next week. Obviously, there are going to be some authors lurking around Barnes & Noble today from 1 to 3.
Well, this is one worth going to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I regularly visit bookstores, but this is a chance to meet Leslie, Mark, and some other authors.
Yeah.
My wife wanted me to be sure to ask you if you do programs. She's heavily into Church Women United, and
this
is the kind of thing that would be a really great program for them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can clearly tell I'm quite passionate about this subject and would be more than happy to talk to about just about anyone about
I must say, Leslie, you have arrived in the publishing world with a bang.
Well, thank you. It feels good. It feels good here.
Okay. Well, Leslie Klipsch has been our guest today, and her Mama Bears Manifesto, a mom's group guide to changing the world. And get at it, ladies, because we could use the change.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we could use a few moments to turn to our good friend, Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well rolled. Book bag.
Well, I've got several books here, and the first one is a new novel by Mark Schwiebert. We interviewed him for his poetry a year or so ago, but he's out with a mystery called The Template, subtitled A Parable of the Environment. And it's an interesting book. It deals, the main character is the President of the United States, who's pro-environment and trying to get environmental issues across the table, and a sinister group who is opposed to any changing in the environment and tries to do him in. So it is It is an essay on the environment inside a mystery story. And I thought that would be, it's short, 150 pages or so. I thought it would be good for two kinds of groups, especially good for book clubs, in that it brings together oil and water, essay and fiction. Do the two work well together? Can you do serious essay work inside a novel, even though the novel is the outside covering of the thing? That would make a really good discussion for book clubs, and it's short. I know some book clubs have trouble getting people to read the book. Nobody will have trouble reading this book. It is a very good mystery and also an intriguing essay inside that mystery, the president's plan for the environment, the template, but the name of the book. The thriller part is well done. It keeps you guessing. It has the same turns that twists that all the thrillers have. I think it would also be good for an environmental group because Mark here doesn't just rehash what could be done for the environment, all the things we've been suggesting, less dependence on oil, et cetera, clean up the oceans and so forth. He really has put together a serious proposal that I haven't seen in quite this form before. I mean, Mark Schwiebert himself I've been thinking about the environment and about the changes. I'm intrigued by the fact that in the book, at least, the plan put out by the president, the main character who is the victim of evil forces, it seems like it might be able to work. Now we wring our hands and say, how can we clean up the oceans? It's too late. We're going to make a little bit of difference. But Mark suggests here a way of moving forward that has the possibility, it seems to me, of actually working. And so I think environmental clubs or anybody who's interested in the environment, you could really get a good discussion going about whether this plan would work.
You know, two things. Mark, as a lawyer, tends to think in terms of what would work legislatively.
Right.
And what might be able to be put across. The second thing is a question. Why is it when you think of writing a book, almost the first thing that leaps to mind is a mystery? There's so many mystery books that are written, and it's as if that genre is so inviting that I know when I've thought about writing something, that's the first thing that presented itself to me.
But well, I think in some sense, every book that has sort of a plot is a mystery, right? Who done it?
Mm-hmm.
How is it going to happen and so forth? So lots of books that we don't classify as mysteries are in fact mysteries. This one, I think, it's because a mystery is a genre in which you could probably stick an essay like this and get away with it. You know, if you're Charles Dickens, you can't.
Well, it's right? The template by Mark Schwiebert, and we recommend it to you, especially if you're a book club. And we recommend you join us again. We'll be back next week for another edition of Scribble.